Blog Talk Radio.
Review on this 28th of September 2013 as we discuss the world of sports. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Jarrell, or hit me up on Facebook.com/SurrealQuinn, or go to my website, SurrealJarrellQuinn.com. Busy program for you as we wrap up the month of September, as well as the baseball regular season with the last weekend of regular season play in baseball. Most of the divisions, all the divisions, just about, I think all the divisions are basically locked up, but it just matter of the wild card races in the National League. You know who's going to be in the wild, who's going to be in the playoffs. It's just a matter of who's going to play in that play-in game or where the play-in game is going to be at, for that matter. Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. Pittsburgh's in tremendous shape to host that game. Right now, they're two games ahead of Cincinnati. All they have to do is win one of the next two, and they will host that play-in game which presumably should be, I would think, Monday. That game would take place on Monday, maybe Tuesday, but I would think they would want to get that game as soon as possible so they can get the rest of the postseason started. So looking more and more like that game's going to be at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh beat Cincinnati yesterday 4-1. In the National League, American League, The race is still in play between three teams. Tampa Bay, Cleveland are tied. Tampa Bay lost to Toronto last night 6-3. Cleveland took out Minnesota 12-6, and Texas is only one game behind as well. You could have a three-way tie for that wild card. So that race is wide open right now. Wide open, certainly you might have to have a couple. I did not go through all the tiebreakers, which I should have. This is a bad job by me. I go through what happens if a three-way tiebreaker occurs. So that American League could go down to, definitely looks like it's going to go down to the last, to tomorrow and the last day of the season. Certainly we're going to have, definitely it should be an exciting wrap up to that, to that particular race. So there you go with the playoff races. Of course, Atlanta, you still have Atlanta and St. Louis fighting for best record in the National League. So that's still in play. But if you clinch a division, you're in good shape. The whole object is you just did not want to be playing in that play-in wild card game, that you wanted to be a divisional winner. That's why I like this, that it puts more emphasis on winning your division rather than just getting in and being a wild card. Before they put this in, there really was not a big difference between winning a division and being a wild card. Now there's a major difference between winning a division and being in a wild card. you win a division, you're guaranteed to be, of course, in the best of five divisional series. If you don't, then you're going to be playing for your lives, on that last day, or not the last day of the regular season, that the day after the regular season. And you're going to have to use up, you figure the way your rotation is lined up, you're going to have to pitch your best pitcher in that particular game. So, if you win that game, then, your rotation is screwed up. So I love it. I love how it's configured. It really makes a team, really makes a wild card team pay for not winning their division. 347-215-6180 is your call number. We have a busy program, a lot to do, certainly with the football. We're going to cover talk about Breaking Bad. Last episode tomorrow, they still run the marathon, the Breaking Bad marathon on AMC. If you don't own the DVDs, you can certainly check it out over the course of the weekend. I think they're on season 5 now, that they'll start up later on tonight. A lot of football. Redskin report is coming up. NFL picks we'll have. Big weekend in college football. There's some great matchups, in particular in the SEC with Georgia and LSU, Alabama and Ole Miss. Two huge matchups with those particular teams. Also, you have a great matchup in the Big Ten, Wisconsin, Ohio State. Won a few times. Ohio State's probably going to be tested this year. So they need to come out with a big performance with that. So we'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. $40 million is the settlement. EA Sports will no longer produce the college football game after this year. This year will be the last year. Of course, you had Denard Robinson on this year's cover for 2014. This lawsuit, the $40 million will be split amongst two to 300,000 players. So, it's not going to be a major payday when you're splitting $40 million amongst two to 300,000 players. But it's better, it's better than nothing. These players will receive compensation for the use of their jersey numbers, likeness, skin color, hair color, all those specific features that the company and also the NCAA was making a fortune off. But again, this is like, a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound, as far as I'm concerned. The NCAA, still is making money. We'll still be making money hand over foot. but was using these players with jerseys and things of that nature. And the NCAA, and the bottom line is the NCAA doesn't have to fork out a dollar for this. This is EA Sports and their lawsuit. So this does not, you know, this overall does not hurt the NCAA. I mean, the NCAA is still going to make billions of dollars off television contracts, bowl games. You know, you have the NCAA tournament for the basketball. Oh, you still have jerseys. I mean, they're still selling jerseys online with players' numbers and what have you. So, I mean, I don't see this being a big deal for the NCAA. I mean, it's a small step in the right direction if you're a current or former player, especially if you're somebody like a Johnny Manziel. I hate to say it, but Johnny Manziel, Jadeveon Clowney, a big-time name whose jersey and things of that nature would you see all the time in universities, bookstores, and merchandise. So for those caliber players, yes, it is a small win. But overall, the NCAA still gets off like bandits. But good for those ex-players and those ex-players suing, and rightfully so. Tiger Woods wins 2013 Player of the Year. Now, this is voted on by other golfers, his peers, so really can't have too much of a problem with it. He did win five times this year, five out of 16 events he entered, had a number of top 10 finishes, but, of course, he won no majors and did not win the FedEx Cup. That was won by Henrik Stenson. It's almost a slap in the face to Tiger Woods because, again, I don't have a problem with it because you look, you know, nobody won more than one major. Though my criteria would be that you had to at least win a major to be player of the year. I'm sorry. That would be my personal criteria. That one major, trust me, Tiger Woods would trade those five tournaments and those 8 to 10 top tens for one of those majors. I guarantee you would make that trade in a heartbeat. So I look at it almost as a slap in the face, you know, because it's a reminder that, hey, yes, you are the player of the year for the 11th time, or record time, which by far and away is the all-time record. You are the player of the year, but you didn't win a major, and you have no majors to show for it. So, I'm sure the players were not thinking about this when they were voting. I mean, by any chance, certainly they weren't thinking about trying to embarrass Woods or trying to bring up the fact that he had won a major. But to me, it is a subtle slap in the face to Tiger Woods that, you know, yes, you are number one. Yes, you are the player of the year. Yes, you did win, you know, these various tournaments. But, again, you did not win a major tournament. And again, you didn't even win the FedEx Cup. So, you know, he deserves it, but big picture, it doesn't, as far as his historical, in terms of historical context, it doesn't mean anything for Woods. So at this point, again, it's all about the major tournaments, whether or not he can get back to winning majors again. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, the Redskins looking for win number one. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this 928 edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back.
But on that clear day, that clear day, you can see forever and ever, evermore.
Welcome back to this latest edition of the Cyril Coon Review on this 28th of September 2013. Of course, we are playing all Breaking Bad music from seasons past and present. Breaking Bad episodes 5, 16, number 62, last ever episode of Breaking Bad tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Looking forward to it. So we'll be playing all music from the Breaking Bad soundtracks over the course of the program. Redskin Report for the week, for a week number four. Week number four, Redskins still seeking their first win. Lost a tough game to Detroit last Sunday in Washington, 27-20. First time Detroit had won a game ever. A game ever in Washington. They have been 0-21 prior to 0-21, the last 21 prior to. And listen, you know, again, you know, the talk of the game was RG3. Again, he had another 300 yard day, but again, no touchdowns. They had an interception. Had a terrible, two just terrible turnovers. The interception, like, was one probably the worst interception he's thrown over during the course of his short career, because he had the pass had no chance to be completed, and a ball that he had enough time to run and throw the ball out of bounds, and the turnover where he fumbles the ball sliding, you know, just inexcusable. But again, to me, that was not the story. There were two stories about that Detroit game. One, the Redskins defense again playing poor, giving up. You know, Matthew Stafford throwing the ball all over the place, giving Redskin defense a total, giving up well over 440 yards of total offense. And the second thing was the Redskins not force-feeding Alfred Morris the football in a game that was close throughout. So it really was no excuse for them not to run the game. The prior two games, they had been trailing, you know, outscoring 50-7 in the first half. That was not the case in the Detroit game. Alfred Morris, the Redskins throw 50 passes and run the ball 20 times. Alfred Morris only gets 15 carries. It's a joke. So Kyle Shanahan, you know, the play calling, you know, you can't. I mean, listen, you're not going to win too many games with that differential between running and passing. I don't care if you don't have a passing game. You're just not going to win too many games, especially now. Like, now more than ever, the Redskins should be leaning on Alfred Morris. And Alfred Morris so far has had a tremendous season when he's gotten the ball. The problem is he's not touching the ball enough. They have to do a better job of getting him 20 to 25 carries a game. I mean, he's a young back. He doesn't have wear and tear on him. Give him the football. It's just that simple. He's your best offensive player. I mean, right now, along with Pierre Garçon, the two best offensive players, they're getting Garçon the football, but they're not getting Alfred Morris the ball. Much easier, of course, to get Alfred Morris the football than it is Pierre Garçon. So, Redskins travel to Oakland cross country. It is a late start, 125 Pacific time, of course, 425 Eastern time, Eastern Standard Time. You'll have Terrell Pryor is probably going to play. He's been medically cleared to play from the concussion he had against Denver last week. Oakland can do some things offensively with McFadden, Pryor, have a couple of receivers that are fast. So this is not going to be, by any stretch of imagination, a cakewalk for the Redskins. This will be a tough game for the Redskins to win. It's a game that they should win. Frankly, Oakland, of course, is a terrible football. We know it's a terrible football team. But again, Terrell Pryor can be dangerous. If he plays, Terrell Pryor can be certainly dangerous against the Redskins. And Oakland really, you know, Denver game, they got embarrassed. But other than that, Oakland has played some decent football, to be completely honest with you. They could have easily beat Indianapolis. Pryor has had some good Pryor has ran the ball well, threw the ball well, has thrown the ball decently. So he's been a pleasant surprise so far this season. And the bottom line is the Redskins are in no position to take anybody lightly. When you're 0-3, you teams are looking to play you. So the Redskins, of course, looking for that first week, first win before a bye week. And it'll be a big win for the Redskins to just feel good about themselves going into the bye week. You're looking at the NFC East division. Nobody's running away with it. I know the Cowboys right now by default are the best team, but they're 2-1. It's not like they're 3-0. Giants are 0-3. And you have Philly at 1-2. Philly plays Denver tomorrow. Dallas travels to San Diego. So, I mean, the Redskins, you know, if Dallas loses, Redskins could be just one game out if they win. That's how tight the division is. And that's a no, because nobody's running away with that division. So, again, you know, you want to say must win? Yes. I mean, historically, teams 0-4, your season's over, even 0-3. But the Redskins just need to get a win. Just need to get a win. And just in general. Little side note here, there's been a lot of talk this week, for whatever reason, talking about that the trade that happened just all last year, okay, 2012. It's not like this trade. This is not the Herschel Walker trade back in the, you know, late 80s, but a trade that happened 2012 with, of course, the Redskins trading number ones to get to be able to put themselves in a position to draft RG3, you know, the Rams getting the number ones, Cleveland, you know, Cleveland being a part of that trade. Way too much is being a part of that trade. I mean, isn't it too early to be deciding who won and who lost in that trade? I mean, come on. I mean, you're going to tell me if the Redskins didn't win and getting a franchise quarterback? Again, why are we talking about a trade that happened all of just last year? If this trade happened in 2007, okay, 3 or 4 years removed, this trade is still, you know, this trade is basically a new trade. I don't understand why there's been so much talk about this trade, but obviously, you know, I guess because of RG3 struggles, because of the Rams' recent struggles and Cleveland being Cleveland, that, you know, it's been determined already in 1 year that everybody lost. Let's give it a little bit more time. Let's at least give it 2 more years before we come to that determination. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk Breaking Bad season series finale. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. After the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Of course, the serious finale of Breaking Bad coming up tomorrow night, 9 p.m. It'll be 75 minutes long. Already the conspiracy theories are out in terms of how it's going to end. You know, a lot of people trying to make a big deal out of the title for Lena. You know, one of the theories that the song is about a cowboy that goes away and loses his love and ends up dying. nobody knows what's going to happen. Let's be honest. Well, the only thing we definitely know for sure is that Walt is coming back to Albuquerque. That's the only thing we know for sure. And that he has, we know a couple things. We know he's coming back to Albuquerque, and we know that he has a big-ass gun, M60, the Rambo gun, and he gets the ricin. Those are the only things that we know for sure that are going to happen. Everything else could be is up in the air. How he uses the ricin. And I've been watching, it's amazing from season two on, that ricin has been a major player in the show from season two on. Because you remember, so it's going to have a major impact on tomorrow's show. Remember, they wanted to kill Tuco with the ricin in season two. And then you had, I'm not sure that it had an effect on us in season three. I think season four, they brought it back season four with them Walt wanting to use it to kill Gus. Then of course Jesse thought that thought that Walt poisoned the little boy with the rice and cigarette initially when in reality he poisoned him with the lilies of the valley. With those plants and the rice and cigarette, has been, now season five, of course, you have Walt hiding the rice and cigarette in behind the outlet in his house. So that rice has been a major, not the cigarette, but just the rice in general. That rice has been playing a major factor throughout the course of the series. And I've been thinking about is I think Skylar's gonna go. I think they'll kill Skylar. Her not knowing who Lydia was and Todd, that whole deal. Lydia, I could see Lydia getting paranoid and saying, "Look, pushing Todd to take Skylar out." I think that's your surprise death of tomorrow, that Skylar gets taken out. I think you wouldn't be surprised if most people expect Walt to die. So it wouldn't be surprising if Jesse died. Of course, everybody expects the gangs and Ty and Uncle Jack expect them to get taken out. But I think Skylar's could be the surprise death of the series finale. But again, nobody knows what's going to happen. No, the writing in the show is too smart to predict what exactly is going to happen. Again, it should be a great, great episode. They tied up most of the storylines, but just a couple of ones, of course, with again, the Rising and the M60 and the Gretchen Elliott, how they play in the mix. Just looking forward to it, and we'll see what happens with that. Still to come, NFL picks and also a preview of the college football season that's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Thank you. 215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Pseudo Crew Review, 12 o'clock, as we discuss the world of sports, big weekend in college football, of course, the game of the weekend, game of the day, LSU number 6 travels down to Athens to go between the hedges to take on Georgia number 9, Georgia completing a just gauntlet of a schedule. This should be the third top 10 opponent they faced in a month. Of course, they began the season in Clemson. They faced South Carolina, played South Carolina, had a little break last week off, but now they're back, right back at it, facing another top 10 opponent, LSU. LSU, you know, I heard a lot of talk going into this season about, of course, Alabama, Ohio State, Johnny Football, Texas A&M, and what have you. Even Georgia, South Carolina, nobody was talking about LSU, which is amazing to me considering how consistent this program has been over the past decade, how good of a coach Les Miles is, how close the LSU is to being, you know, back-to-back national championships, BCS champions, and how, like, if it wasn't Alabama, LSU could be Alabama right now. With a little, a play here, a play there, some luck here, some luck. I mean, LSU got no respect going into this season. They come out, they handle TCU, and now people are recognizing again that LSU is a legit national championship contender. They have a big time quarterback in Zach Mettenberger, who almost went to Georgia, and they have that same class, Aaron Murray. They have great athletes up and down the field, all around the field, defensive end, you know, secondary as usual, run day. They have a million running backs. I mean, it's the LSU. I don't understand the lack of respect coming into the season that, I don't understand why people just dismiss them as being a top program. Like, unless their recruiting has dropped, which I didn't get that at all, but they are a legit national championship contender. And this is this is a much bigger game for LSU from the standpoint of this. Georgia can lose this game and still control the SEC East. They'll still be in control of the SEC East because they have beaten, they've beaten South Carolina. They still play Florida. Florida will be their last tough game. LSU still has Florida at Ole Miss, at Alabama, and Texas A&M on their schedule. I mean, SEC schedule is always the toughest in the conference, hands down. When you look at these top teams, whether it be Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, Florida, LSU always has the toughest schedule. And this is a game that they need to get in order to win this conference. I can't see them win this conference with having more than one loss. They can't have more than one loss coming into this conference. And they lose this game, they're going to lose one of those four games. I mean, they're going to lose, without question. They have to hope Alabama loses two SEC games, which is not going to happen. So, they need this game in the worst way. It should be a great game. I would lean slightly towards Georgia because Georgia has been playing in a number of these big games all season long. Should be old hat for them. But, again, would not be surprised. Home field advantage has not meant much in this series. You look all time, Georgia is 5-5, 5-5-1 at Baton Rouge. LSU is 7-6 at Georgia in all time. So really, these are teams that are capable of winning on each other's home fields or in each other's campuses. These two programs, putting Alabama aside, have been the most successful programs in the SEC regular season-wise. Now, Florida has the championship, so you have to put them above those two in terms of the national championships. But in terms of regular season record, LSU and Georgia have been near at the top of the SEC for a long time. So should be a great game, battle of the quarterbacks, certainly a number of NFL skilled players will be on the field. Aaron, with the quarterbacks, Gurley, probably the best running back in the league in college football, if not, you know, certainly up there. So it should be a tremendous game later on this afternoon as LSU travels to Georgia. Alabama hosts Ole Miss. Ole Miss, of course, comes in ranked number 21. Alabama, we all know, of course, is number one in the country. Alabama coming off, a suspect performance versus Colorado State, and a game that they took off, let's be honest. It's a game that they just showed up and said, with Alabama, we're not even going to put forth. We're going to save our A game for the following week. So they basically toyed with Colorado State, the home game, coming off to Texas A&M, that showdown. So, they didn't take that game seriously whatsoever. So expect a bigger performance out of Alabama this game. A lot of people like Mississippi. A lot of people love their talent. They've had a couple of good recruiting classes. They have, four of the top 20 recruits as freshmen that come into this year. Of course, the number one recruit in the country, the defensive end, who's supposed to be a big-time player. We'll see what he can do against that Alabama offensive line. But, again, I don't see how you deal with Alabama with that offense unless you can just – unless – all right. Again, if Texas A&M can't outscore Alabama, I don't see how Ole Miss can. I mean, Alabama to me offensively is a juggernaut. They're gonna put 40 to 50 points a game on the board when they want to. Last week, because they took the week off, but their offense is just unstoppable. I mean, their offensive line is playing good, not great, but just good. You know, with McCarron, those receivers, they're so deep at the running back position. We're deep at the tight end position. I think Ole Miss will hang in for a half, but I see Alabama pulling away something 41-27, something like that. I think it might even be worse than that. I'm not sure Ole Miss is ready for this level of play and for this type of game. Alabama, of course, lives in these big games and these primetime games. It's what they do. That's what they do as far as just playing all these number of big games that they played in over the past, especially in the Nick Saban era. You have Wisconsin at Ohio State. This probably be one of the few other than Michigan, this probably will be the only major test that Ohio State has in the Big Ten this season. Very important for Ohio State not to beat Wisconsin, but to beat them handily. Because if you're Ohio State, you're not looking for just wins. You're looking for to impress these pollsters and impress these writers, these college football writers and people around the country, these Harris polls and the BCS polls. You're looking for points. You're looking for cool points as well, style points. I mean, you're looking. So it's not just Ohio State just has to do more than just win. They have to really go out there and put a number of points on the board, blow out people, and it would go a long way if they were to handle a very good Wisconsin football team. You have Notre Dame hosting Oklahoma. Oklahoma looking for revenge after being embarrassed by Notre Dame last season. Neither one of these teams are very good teams. They both ranked in the top 20, but they're not very good at all. Oklahoma is not. This is not a finished Oklahoma team by any stretch of imagination. But they will be searching for some revenge against the Irish. Notre Dame lifetime is 8-1 against Oklahoma. So there you go with the college football. Again, a big weekend. After last weekend was one of the worst weekends you'll ever see with all these number of cupcake matchups that you had top teams playing against and just had these FCS teams just taking the paychecks. So you get a nice rebound week in college football, and should be, again, looking forward to that LSU, Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss matchup. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk about week number 4 in the league where no contract is guaranteed. Talk some NFL, do NFL picks. We'll be right back. number four in the league with no contract is guaranteed. End of the fourth, it will be the end of the first quarter of the NFL season as teams look for first wins, certain teams looking for 4-0. We begin in the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado, where the Broncos and the Peyton Manning Show will be on full display as they host Chip Kelly's Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles have scored points, but they've also turned over the football. They are 12-point underdogs. They have a couple things going for them. Michael Vick, you know, has been explosive as far as running the football. LeSean McCoy has been the best running back in the NFL right now, leading the league in rusher. And that's about it, because their defense, again, has been atrocious. And again, the Eagles have been sloppy. I think that's plagued them over the past couple of years. That's turning over the football. That will not bode well going into Denver. Denver has been an absolute machine this season. They lead the world in points. Peyton Manning is on pace for his fifth MVP, playing like world beaters. But guess what? They're not unbeatable by any stretch of imagination. I have to see Denver against a real defense before I go too crazy. But they will not see a real defense this week. Denver 41, Philadelphia 24. They should have their way. Peyton Manning. The question in this game, will Peyton Manning play the fourth quarter? That would be the question in this game. This game will be a one-sided game. Again, Denver is just... I wonder how the Philadelphia Eagle offense is going to look in that high altitude in Denver. I wonder how fast they'll get worn down. We'll see what they do and what happens. But again, should be an easy, and I mean easy, Denver Bronco victory. Game number two, San Diego hosting the Dallas Cowboys. As we try to cue our music here, San Diego hosts the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas is a 1-point favorite. Dallas scores coming off a quality win last week against the St. Louis Rams. San Diego coming off another heartbreaking loss against the Tennessee Titans. All San Diego's losses or games have been decided by 3 points. By 3 points, they're 1-2. So they played relatively well over the course of the season. Phillip Rivers completing 70% of his passes, 8 touchdowns, just 1 interception. Tony Romo has been efficient. DeMarco Murray's played well. San Diego just finds a way to lose close games, and I think it'll be the case in this game. This will be a very close game throughout. Even though I think Dallas is a little bit better, I trust Dallas a little bit more than I trust San Diego. These two teams have been a poster child for two franchises that have been stacked with talent, but that have found the ways to underachieve. I think Dallas comes out on top, 23-20. Difference in this game is I think DeMarco Murray will have a huge, huge game against San Diego, which is not very good against the run. So I'll take Dallas to cover 23-20. Game number three, a very intriguing game, to say the least, a battle of unbeatens. Miami at 3-0 travels down to the Big Easy to take on the Bayou Bengals. New Orleans Saints at 3-0 as well. Saints are a 6.5-point favorite. But guess what? I like the Dolphins. I think the Dolphins are one of these teams. Every year the NFL has teams where you look at them statistically, you say, well, how are they winning? And these are the types of teams that just know how to win in the fourth quarter, win these close games, make big plays, get a big turnover, get a big, a game-winning drive. Miami is that team. I mean, you look at them statistically, Miami doesn't blow anybody away with their numbers. Saints, on the other hand, have been tremendous defensively, only giving up 12.7 points per game and less than 300 yards total defense. But I like Miami in this game. Miami already has had an impressive road win at Indianapolis earlier this season. Both these teams have wins, home wins over Atlanta. I like Miami to win this game 27-24. It's my, you want to call it upset of the week? Fine, call it an upset. I don't think it'd be a major upset. Drew Brees has been average this year. 6 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. So we'll see if he can pick it up in this particular game. But again, I like the Miami Dolphins to upset the New Orleans Saints. Game number four, New England traveling down to the Peach State, Georgia, take on the one and two Falcons. Now this game is a perfect example of teams not being as good or at their record or as bad as their record. New England's 3-0. Okay. The record of the teams that they've beaten are 7-23. New England is one of the worst looking 3-0 teams you ever see. Tom Brady's been average. They can't run the football. Their defense is, you can still pick apart that secondary defensively. Compared to Atlanta, which has road losses at Miami and at New Orleans. So those are the two Atlanta losses. Atlanta, to me, is still a better team than New England. I like Atlanta to win this game 31-20. New England, again, hasn't played anybody. They will get exposed in this game by the Atlanta Falcons and by Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, and company. Again, I like the Falcons to come up, coming off a loss, to have a big performance in this game. Julio Jones and company, Jaquez Rogers, I think will have a nice game against that New England defense. Again, New England offensively is just averaging 19 points a game. They've won some ugly games. They've just been forcing them to play offensively inept teams like the Jets, the Bills, the Buccaneers. This is not a vintage New England team by any stretch of imagination. Again, I look for a big, big performance out of the Atlanta Falcons. So, four games. I'll take Denver with the points, crushing Philadelphia, 41-24. I'll take Dallas with the points to edge out San Diego, 23-20, which will be a field goal game. I have my one upset, Miami taking out New England, New Orleans, despite the fact that New Orleans is a 6.5-point favorite. I like Miami to win the game. I like the mojo Miami has going for them right now. And I'll take Atlanta with the points over New England. So I'll take three favorites and one dog in week four picks in the league where no contract is guaranteed. When we return, I will talk about a NFC North divisional matchup, Bears-Lions. I'll give you my thoughts on that particular game when we return on this latest edition of Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. On this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Of course, you have Chicago and Detroit battling tomorrow. I was very impressed with Chicago last Sunday night against Pittsburgh. They went to Pittsburgh against a desperate 0-2 Pittsburgh Steelers team, and they handled their business. I mean, despite giving up a million yards passing, they turned Pittsburgh over. Turned Pittsburgh over and won an impressive won a game, 40-24. Still, again, you wonder about Jay Cutler in a big spot. So I'm not going to go too crazy with that. I still think Green Bay is the best team in the division. Detroit, again, I don't know about Detroit. When they get Reggie Bush back, we'll see I just, you know, it's just something, again, beating Washington to me shouldn't show me anything. They beat Minnesota as well. Those two wins don't tell me anything, to be honest with you. They don't. We'll see Detroit. I think that'll be a good test for Detroit taking on Chicago. I think that'll be an excellent, you know, I'm not going to call it the acid test, but I think that'll be a good gauge just to see where they're at. You know, you look at the NFL again, there are a number of teams that you're not quite sure about despite their record. Again, New England's on that list. We know that Atlanta and Green Bay are better than 1-2 teams, than 1-2. We know San Francisco is better than 2-2. They had an impressive performance against the Rams and they got back to their roots, and that is running the football. So we know that. But some of these other teams, I'm not quite sure about the Saints at 3-0. Miami, I think, is pretty good. Kansas City, we'll see how good they are once they return to action. When they return to action, especially when they play Denver. Denver looks to be by far and away the class of the AFC. I mean, you look at the AFC, I mean, the Pittsburgh's down. Not sure about Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore did have an impressive victory. They have an impressive win last week over Houston, but you just don't know that. I mean, they can win that division by default, to be honest with you, with Pittsburgh being out, Cleveland being awful, Cincinnati being, you know, schizophrenic. So again, the NFL, right, NFC East looks dreadful right now with the Giants and Redskins being 0-3, Eagles being, you know, a mediocre team as well, not, you know, exciting, but still not a playoff, legit playoff team. So, you know, the NFL right now kind of is all over the place. I mean, it really is. And there's no, I mean, Seattle is a big-time team. Denver looks to be a big-time team, especially when they get Vaughn Miller and Chan Bailey back. The NFC right now, again, I think San Francisco will be fine, especially when they start getting some people back. The NFC East, who knows? I mean, maybe Dallas could win it by default. I mean, the NFC East, I don't know. I think the Giants look like one of the worst teams in the league. I mean, the Giants genuinely look like one of the worst teams in football right now. I think Green Bay will be fine. They've had a couple of tough losses. That Cincinnati loss was just a brutal loss, forcing, you know, 6 turnovers and still losing and blowing a 30-14 lead. It's still losing the game. I think Green Bay will be fine, to be honest with you. But again, a lot, you know, we just don't know about a lot of these teams moving forward in the NFL. So, and again, you'll get a better sense. I say by mid October, early November, you'll get a much better sense of where these teams are going, or where these teams are headed over the course of the regular season. Of course, we began talking about the baseball. You have two races both wild card races are wide open. Or not wide open. Both wild card races. The American League wild card race is wide open. Tampa Bay and Cleveland are tied. Texas is a game behind, so all those teams have two games to play. It could be a wild finish in terms of a tiebreaker, especially if all three of those teams end up with the same record. The NL wild card basically is wrapped up. Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. Pittsburgh has a two-game lead, but just two games to play, so any combination of a Pittsburgh win or a Cincinnati loss in the next two games will give – well, because they play each other, so, you know, if you know, Pittsburgh wins, then – Pittsburgh wins one of the next two games, then Pittsburgh will host the wild card game against Cincinnati. I would think either Monday or Tuesday. I don't know how the schedule's going to work out, but either Monday or Tuesday. But again, the wild card, you want to win your division. You don't want to be in a situation where, you know, you're playing for your wild card lives. So you don't want to you want to take care of your business and win a division. But again, it keeps baseball exciting, at least because a lot of these divisional races have been over for a long time. The Atlanta NL East race has been over for a while. The Dodgers and the NL in the West, the American League East race in terms of what the division has been over for a long time. Even the National, the American League Central. I mean, we got the sense that Detroit, at Cleveland, or Kansas City were not Cleveland, Kansas City, we're not going to catch Detroit. We're not going to catch Detroit in that particular race. So I guess the wild card has provided a ton of excitement for these races. And again, one and done. I mean, that you know, that's as good as it gets in terms of in baseball when you have a one game playoff, and that, you know, the loser goes home. So we'll see what happens with that. That'd be a great matchup, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, and those two teams having to use their first front line starters going into the next best of five series. Of course, all the baseball playoffs will start, I'm thinking probably today's the 28th. You know, probably on Wednesday or Thursday. In terms of divisional series, maybe Tuesday, Wednesday. Of course, the schedule has yet to be determined, but baseball playoffs will certainly start this week. And again, you will go into the playoffs with not having a clue who's going to win it. It's as wide open as anybody. You're going to hear a lot of Dodger talk. You're going to hear a lot of Cardinal talk, a lot of Detroit talk. I mean, you could have Oakland and Pittsburgh in the World Series. I mean, who knows? Who knows? You just don't know. It is as wide open. There's as much parity in baseball as there is in any sport right now. Oakland is a team to watch. They have, again, great pitching. They know how to win back-to-back division titles. So I'll be very much keep your eye on Oakland in terms of the playoffs. Of course, we know how good the Dodgers have been throughout the course of the season. Probably St. Louis is probably the most well-rounded team, and a team that knows how to win. You know, St. Louis knows how to win championships. I mean, they know how to win. They know how to get to – they've been to a couple World Series, been to a number of NLCSs in the last 6-7 years, so they know how to win. World State should be exciting. You know, Boston – when Boston gets in the playoffs, Boston normally plays well. So we'll see what the Red Sox do in the playoffs this year. So it should be an exciting playoff season, exciting postseason in the football play, in the basketball playoffs, excuse me, baseball playoffs. We'll be all over it, talking about it next week on next edition of the Circle Review. We'll also, again, have our Breaking Bad show coming up. Thinking probably, I mean, it'll be either Monday, it'll be either Tuesday or Wednesday. It'll be Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll do a show. We'll talk about that, the season finale of Breaking Bad. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We will be back in a couple of days. Have a great, great weekend.